This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with the Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Okay, well, this is an exciting day. I have two wonderful guests. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to... this is a fascinating story. F. E. Pompours wrote a book called Becoming Bulletproof, Protect Yourself, Read People, Influence Situations, and Live Fearlessly. And she was with the Secret Service, and I'm excited to talk to her. But right now, wow, this is so exciting. I have on the program today, well, 13 billion reasons to talk to this person, 13 billion to one. And it is Randy Rush. Is Randy there?
Yes, I am.
Good morning. Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm in Vancouver, Canada, a little north of Seattle. So
okay. Well, that's a beautiful place.
It's going to be a lovely day.
It is. Wow. You know, I think what people have to do when they get this book, and it is fascinating, it's called 13 Billion to One. And it is a memoir, unlike so many. I mean, it is almost a nail biter. And your name is Randy Rush, Randall. And you almost have to just get a popcorn here and read it because it reads like a movie, and an unbelievably wonderful movie. I think that one that at the end will have people cheering, standing up in the aisles cheering, that you, after all you went through, and you're going to explain it, but after all you went through, you win $50 million, which is pretty that's spectacular in itself. But then that when somebody takes advantage of you, you fight back, and you fight back in such a wonderful way, as you're describing what the fight back, and we'll talk about that. But there's a point where you're talking about being in court, and it's like almost a out of body experience, and you're there, and you're fighting the bad guys, and it's really something that most people would have given up on, but you didn't. Partly because you had the money to fight, but also because you had the courage to do it. And so I know this is going to be a film. I mean, I don't even doubt that.
Well, I appreciate that. And we are talking. There are preliminary talks with Netflix and people in Hollywood already. So and just talks. There's nothing.
Oh no! Well, this has to be, as you know. I used to write scripts, and so when I get a book that I see it in my head. I know what's going to, you know, it's just, I can see it visually. I can see it on the screen. And I start, as I'm reading the book, I say, who is going to play Randy Rush? What lucky actor out there is going to play Randy Rush?
So, we haven't talked to this person yet, but I'll just throw it out there. Jack Black.
Ah, wow.
Yeah. I think he'd be perfect for it. So.
Well.
So we'll see. If he's listening, we'd love to talk with you, Jack.
Well, that's it. I know. I wrote a film for Debbie Reynolds. And we were supposed to shoot it in 2008 here in Florida. It's a comedy, and I wrote it specifically for her, and she was here. And then, of course, 2008 happened, the big, you know, fall, and everything crashed down, and our you know, everything just went into turnaround. And then by the time we could re-get it, you know, reboot it, she was too old. We couldn't get insurance on her. But in your case, this is going to be a wonderful film because there are so many parts in it where you're like, you're just saying, yeah, yay, yay, Randy, go for it.
Yeah.
So let's step back. you win the lottery. Wow. You know, that's enough for anybody. Explain that moment for us. What happened?
It's taken about 5 years to really digest it. It's a little over 5.5 years now. The experience is so surreal, and the adrenaline rush is so intense. You could die of a heart attack quite easily. It's like the space shuttle going up. If you can imagine those people in the space program and the rocket, the amount of force behind you and that ride going up. I actually did develop a sleeping disorder for about 2 years. It took about 2 years to come down, 2.5 years. And I'm back to normal now. Everything is normal, but it took about 2.5 years to really, for those endorphins to really come down, you know.
Well, you had a very complicated life, complicated childhood.
Yeah.
Many people, I think, thinking, you know, sometimes when you hear about somebody winning money and you say to yourself, oh, well, you know, why would somebody like that win money? And yet just never know what God has in mind, because, you know, it is a miracle that in your youth, I mean, you can tell us about some of the problems, including your biological father. But there was this part of you that was interested at a young age in the Bible and in the ministry. And that really saved you.
Oh, big time. Oh, big time. In fact, the only two reasons I'm not in jail is Jesus and my stepdad. he was a very heavy-handed stepfather, which I have no regrets, by the way. It's not for every child, but for this child, it was necessary. And, so it was a very military sort of upbringing, and which I could have done without some of the experiences, but at the end of the day, I had that healthy fear of my stepdad and my healthy fear of my mom, you know, and it was kind of necessary to keep me on the straight and narrow, I suppose.
So let's talk about what happened here. You win this fabulous amount of money.
Yes.
And you know that for we see this always on television. They get houses and they help people and then so many of them actually run through their money. So many, unfortunately, don't have this whatever you had in you, that little bit of spark, that touch of God that kept you going, because it's a tragedy when I knew somebody who knew somebody who won the lottery in England, but the woman lost everything. But I mean, in the end, she not only lost everything she won, she owed a fortune. So that you've come out of it, and now in a big way, you're going to be helping people. We'll talk about that. But explain how you were conned and how you decided that you were not going to stand for it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I sort of have to back up a little bit, because I knew I was coming into money, and it's in the book, and it sounds fabricated, it sounds pokey, but I never thought 50 million, but I thought maybe 3-4, maybe if I was lucky 5. And when you go before the lottery, you go through, you know, before a lottery commission, and you tell your story, and I said, listen, guys, ladies and gentlemen, I said, this sounds absolute nonsense. And they stopped me and they said, we hear it all the time, Randy, so don't worry. So I felt this wall of energy coming. So in my mind, I was preparing what to do. And it was very, very intense for about 2 years prior. And so I had a checklist. And I actually got out of a personal relationship I had with a gal I was going out, because I felt it coming and it wouldn't have been good for her and her kids. And then when it did happen, I started executing my plan. And I was down on the West Coast here. I was in a hotel in a very small community in the lower mainland in Vancouver here, right on the beach, and maybe five people had my phone number, maybe. And one of those was my, who at the time I considered my one of my very closest friends. And he was a little older, you know, and he was about 10 years older than me. And, you know, I met his son a couple times, and, you know, he seemed quite an intelligent guy who landed on hard times. And then the phone rang in my hotel room, and his son Dave, you know, well, Dave is Dave Crawford. And then his son Jeremy phoned up. I met a couple of times prior, just very, you know, church circles stuff. And he wanted to come down and show me a software idea. And I said, Jeremy, I'm just not looking at anything for a year, you know. And he said, well, after a long conversation, he said, well, can I come down to show you? And I said, okay, you know. And it was a great idea. And I had it vetted. It was a phenomenal idea. And it was real, but at the center of it, there was one person who was embezzling the cash, and that was him and his mom and dad. So, and the story's in another, that whole story's in another book I released on March 3rd called Bloodsuckers, and that's available on Amazon. And we document his entire life. They've conned over 200 people to the tune of about $30 million in cash, cars, and assets. Where I really got evangelical, so to speak, about the story was as we were writing Bloodsuckers. We did over 112 interviews, I believe. And there was one story in there where it was an immigrant couple who were working two jobs each, four jobs between the two of them. And they saved up $7,000 over 2 years. And they were going to church with Jeremy, and he took them in a lease-to-own scam and left them homeless. And then there was another story in that same scam he had where it was a young married couple with a three-month-old baby, and they were living in their van for 3 months, and they were so embarrassed to tell their parents. And I think their family still doesn't know to this day if I got the story right. And I thought, you know what, that's pretty low-balling stuff, man. You know, and... So that's when I really started to get serious about pursuing the white-collar criminal end of things and the white-collar crime thing, you know. And, and the more I got into it, the more I saw more stories like the Crawfords, you know, sort of these mini Bernie Madoffs, so to speak, you know. And it's a real shame, you know, that I can steal your car and go to jail, but I can sell you some Class B shares, and I can take off, and there's, sue me, go ahead, sue me. And, you know, most people don't have the funds to do that, you know, it's $10,000 to $20,000 just to get in front of a judge, you know, and it's so that's where these guys live. They take you for everything you have, not only emotionally, mentally, and physically, and spiritually in a lot of cases, and they leave you completely destitute. But what our focus is we're taking a very holistic approach where we show you the stages of grief, and we're working on it now. We're talking to some pretty serious people who are educated, and we take the stages of grief, and we give tools to the person to help recognize those stages of grief and to help move on, you know. And my experience with the Crawfords, I mean, I could have done without, but at the same time, I'm glad it happened. It's made me a way wiser person. You know, when I see people coming, sometimes I see them a mile away now. You know, so and not to make the experience leave you bitter, you know, because, you know, life is great, you know, whatever life you live and whatever level, you know, you know, just enjoy life to the fullest and just turn the negatives into positives, you know. And how can I be a better person? How can I learn from this? And I took, you know, I got an education you don't get at Harvard or MIT, dude. So that's where I left it.
Well, sometimes the life of hard knocks really is the best school. I mentioned the movie that we were going to make with Debbie Reynolds. Two of the investors were actually, they lost most of their money. They were here in Florida, of course, and they had invested in Madoff. And, I mean, they were from being investors in a major motion picture starring Debbie Reynolds. They were nothing. I mean, it was so mind-boggling. It was so heartbreaking. I only saw them one time after that, and it was like they lost their minds. I mean, they weren't the same people. One day, they're investing in a major motion picture. The next day, they discover they have nothing, you know. Everything's collapsing around them because they lost to Madoff, and then they lost to the whatever was left in the stock market that they had. They lost that day, you know, when the market closed down, I don't know, to the bottom. So people get so they do get ashamed. They close themselves off, and they don't want to talk about it. So I think what you're doing. Let's explain. I wanted to be, you know, because we'll explain about the group, the media group that you've established. But I did want to, just to inspire people to read this book. I'm telling people that it's almost like it is a mystery story because you don't know what's going to happen with Randy's lawsuit, and in between there you have all these. Just fascinating stories, and let's just mention your birth father because that's part of the story of who you are and where you got this. Let's just say this gumption or whatever we want to call it that you were not going to be taken. So let's
my biological father. Are we talking my biological father?
Yeah, your biological father.
My biological father. I learned most of my family history as an assistant chaplain in Kent Maximum Security Prison, let's put it that way. About every 3 months, someone came down the hall, hey, Glenn's kid, yeah, up there, pal, you know. He was a longshoreman, and he brought in probably the majority of the heroin for Vancouver from the late 60s to early 70s, late 70s, and... the one time I do recall meeting him, he just got out of prison for hijacking a tractor trailer load of dynamite and color TVs. You know, that was around 1970, when color TVs were a fortune, you know. And from what I understand, he was a really great guy. He just had a flip side, you know. And then I met his brother or my uncle when I was 31. And he's one of the leading authorities on Mayan hieroglyphics. He reads those temples down in, you know, Mexico and Carmen de Playa all down there, Cancun, and he translates all that stuff. And he just lived in a van, last I saw him, and he's lectured at Harvard. He's a total dropout. Off the grid kind of guy, lectures at Harvard.
This book is so fascinating. Your biological father was murdered. Sort of a horrific murder because he was part of a gang, and they murdered all of them. You know, this is a real gangster type of thing, and you had all this, but yet you have a uncle who's obviously brilliant because it is not easy to read those Mayan not easy. And so there's such a, I mean, from a scriptwriter's point of view, it's like. Just a joy. This is going to be a joy.
Okay. we haven't got to my mother yet.
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention. Throw in your mother, throw in this, throw in that. I mean, there's so many things. It's like, actually, it should probably be a streaming video as opposed to a major motion picture because there's so much to tell here. There's so many. It's just so fascinating, and that brings me to the part that I love most about you, is how you were called to Africa, because I have taken a particular interest in Africa, all of my life, but partly because I review a lot of Nat Geo books all about, you know, conservation, protecting the environment, particularly. Saving the wildlife in Africa. And one of the people who has been on my program many times, and actually he was a guest host, was Peter Riva. And he writes books set in Africa. And they're wonderful, mostly mysteries, but the basic idea is to tell people the story of Africa and how wonderful and how we need to, like, save the animals and the work that needs to be done in Africa. So tell us about a little bit. We don't have much time. And I think, actually, okay. I have to have you back. I'd like to have you back. I'd like to have you back for a whole, maybe, another half an hour, so we can just specifically talk about your Africa adventure. But tell us what you're doing there before we start talking about Rantana.
Sure. Well, that was a project I saw start about 35 years ago, and it was a small idea, but an African children's choir, and that's what it's called, the organization. It's a lovely organization. And then I came back into the fold about 35 years later, and there was this growing, flourishing, organization. And I got involved in one of their projects in just south of Kampala, where they were building a school. And I purchased most of the land, or all of it. I can't remember which of the two, but quite a bit. And some other business people were involved. And then going back to Africa was really a major reset. It was and gives a whole new meaning to first world problems. And you know, when you come back from Africa, you realize how entitled our politics here are in North America. And, it's really puts a different look on things. And the people there are really lovely. You know, they're just, you know, there's bad people everywhere you go, right? But at the same time, on par with everything else, they're just lovely people. And, you know, some of these kids are walking 5 miles a day to go to school. And my gosh, you know, they want to learn. You know, they're excited when they get a pencil. How can you not get behind that?
Well, I think your work is beautiful, and as I said, I would like to really have you back specifically to talk about the Africa part of what is going to be, I'm sure, a major streaming video of life story about everything. Now, it's not just winning the lottery, because it's you're also just a fascinating person in
Thank
and of
you.
Yourself. And I'm going to be talking to Caitlin and Rick Sumi. They are your they are wonderful publicists. They are the best in the business, because they are always after me, and they find me wonderful, wonderful people like you to talk to. And
thank you.
I want to mention the book again is 13 Billion to One, a memoir by Randy Rush, and with Ingrid Ricks, which is I like to always give a plug to everybody who's involved in it.
Ingrid is like we talked about, the negative experiences, but you know, I got to work with a person like Ingrid Ricks. I mean, and I dedicated the book to her because, during the writing of the book, she was losing her eyesight, and you would have never known it.
So.
And, she's such a motivated person. She's, I got to get her on the motivational speaking circuit, really do.
Okay, well, look, I'm going to get you back here. I'm going to get you back here.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Rantana Media, which is wonderful, wonderful group that you've done, put together to really fight all of the scam artists out there. And we'll also talk about Africa, okay? So they'll be in contact with you, and we'll have you back on soon, because I think you're fascinating. And the book is wonderful. Really a great read. You wouldn't some people would say, oh, well, like, how could it be so fascinating? I'm telling you, this is a fascinating story, and it reads like a mystery. So it's 13 Billion to One by Randy Rush, available wherever books are sold. Thank you so much, Randy, for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you very much, and it was an absolute delight to be on your program.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Okay, bye for now, exactly. Oh, wow.
Bye for now.
Okay. Isn't that fascinating? What a guy. And now, I'm talking about Reed people. I am so excited that I am now talking to somebody. You know, Randy should have met this author before he got involved with all the people that he got involved with, because Evi Pampouros is what a story she has to tell here. And her book is called Becoming Bulletproof: Protect Yourself, Read People, Influence Situations, and Live Fearlessly. And she served as a Secret Service agent under Presidents Obama, Bush, and Clinton. And she has a fascinating career. I will let her tell us about it. Hi, Evi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, fine. Well, I was just talking. I just interviewed Randy Rush, who won $50 million. And his problem, he won $50 million in the lottery 5 years ago. And, of course, immediately scam artists were coming after him. And one of them got him and scammed $5 million out of him. So I thought, too bad he didn't read your book. And learn how to protect yourself, read people, and influence situations, because he went through hell. Tell us about this, you know, a little bit more about you, because you are absolutely, I mean, so interesting, because you were there for 9/11, and you were given the U.S. Secret Service Valor Award. I think one of the few women who have received it. So let's back up a little. Tell us about that, and then we'll talk about the book.
Yeah. So, you know, I started my career in the U.S. Secret Service, and I don't want to say by accident, it wasn't really a career that I really thought I'd ever go into. Nobody in my family was in government, any form of law enforcement, anything. And it kind of just came from a place of where, you know, we grew up in a rough part of New York City. I was a daughter of immigrants, and we kind of had a rough go at it, like many people who grow up in low-income communities. And I think when you grow up in that way, you kind of either become more afraid and surrender to fear, or you almost become sick of it, and you say, you know what, I'm going to figure out how to protect myself, protect the people I love, and contribute to the world in such a way, or to my community, my country, in such a way so that I can help for this not to exist, if that makes sense. You know, I want to be part of a solution rather than the problem. And that really kind of led into my path into going to becoming a Secret Service, applying and thinking that I could apply and that I should apply, and then going through the hiring process. And I just happened to get hired right before 9/11, and our offices were in the World Trade Center at the time. And as a result, just by working there and being there, you know, that led to, you know, those events and decisions to stay and help people in the best way that I could, to help, you know, help save lives and help do the right thing by people, by humanity.
Well, it was a horrific day, and that you were personally involved in it, and actually running to the terror. What an introduction to your career.
You know, I share that story because I was reluctant to really share it, but I shared it in the beginning because I felt like anything that I shared in the book, I wanted to have a meaning, a lesson in it. I didn't want the book to be like, hey, here's my life, let me tell you about it. Because the purpose of the book was to give people and share with everybody everything I learned. So how do you take a girl from Queens, New York, who didn't know anything about anything, I just want to put that out there, and evolve her into something different? And I realize that anybody can do this. If you give people the tools, and if they have the passion, if they want to learn, they can become the best, strongest, most resilient version of themselves. And everybody wants that. I'm constantly approached by people. I have this problem. Or like Randy, you were saying, I can't tell you how many scams, especially now that people are working from home. Oh. On a daily basis, I hear from a friend or a friend of a friend of a friend, hey, this happened to me, what do I do? And people just really want guidance. Help me maneuver this. Help me manage this difficult situation. And that was at crux why I wrote the book. And even even reading the book, you know, I really was passionate about reading my own audiobook because I was like, I want to talk to the person because we all want to have that person's voice in our ear to help us through, help me through this difficult moment. And I put so much time and heart into reading my book because I want to tell people, I hear you, I'm with you, I understand you, let's go. Here's everything I know, and I'm going to walk you through all these difficulties so that when you deal with them, you can overcome, not just overcome them, crush them and thrive in them.
Exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned the Audible book because the Audible version is incredible. I was thinking, well, if she didn't have this other careers, you could be a narrator for so many. You put so much energy and excitement in your reading of your own book, which rarely happens with an author. It's
you know,
amazing.
I love Audible books.
Me
I
too.
I love Audible books. I don't read anything on paper. I listen. And there's so many great books out there, and I don't know if this has happened to you, where you hear the person reading it, and you're like, this book has got like 5 stars. I'm like, but I can't listen to this person read this book. And it was so important for me to resonate and just read it in a way so that people don't want to turn the radio off when they're listening to me read the book. I wanted it to impact people, and I really wanted people to feel like, I'm here and I'm with you.
It does. It is. It should. It has to win a prize because it has to be one of the best Audible books I've ever heard. I listened to it twice and I thought, the first time I said, kept saying, she's not a professional. She's not a professional. And the second time, you know, I read it. I listened again and I thought, wow, the passion that you put in it, because there's so many things that you know that resonate with the listener. Of the way that you talk about things that you've gone through. Now let's talk here. We're talking about what you're saying here. Protect yourself, read people, influence situations, and live fearlessly. Because so often, and this is a problem. People make these mistakes. They don't really see past sort of the sort of sugar-coated part of life, and they aren't able to read people, and they get in trouble. Now, partly, of course, where did this come from? You were an interrogator for the Department of Defense, right, for the polygraph.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. I was duped. I didn't know things in life, and you talk to people, and you're like, and you know what happens is we look at a person, we're like, oh, they seem such a good person. Even people that seem good, even people that are good, even people that love us and care for us, they can mislead us. They can lead us down the wrong path. Even people we love can hurt us. Who hasn't been hurt by someone they care about? We all have. And so what I do with the book, I say to people, it is on you to know how to assess people. So kind of don't judge a person on who they are. Assess them on what they're showing you. Assess their actions, their words, and that way you can navigate through things. So when things do happen to you, you're not that person who's stuck in that, oh my God, look what this person did to me. It's their fault. It's them. It's them. It's them. Because when we do that, right, when we blame everybody else for doing things to us, we have no power. But the person who did it, they have the power. So unless they change or something with them changes, we can't fix the problem. But when you say, I have the power, the solution lies with me and the problem lies with me, then you can change it. It's a completely different mindset. It's the mindset of the person who's like, look what the world is doing to me, versus the mindset of, look what I am doing to the world. Different.
Well, you know, one of the things, of course, this is such a difficult time right now for people. The combination of, the pandemics, what that has entailed here, people being home, people are vulnerable in many ways to getting messages on the internet and to even, you know, I know people who are clicking on things that they wouldn't normally be clicking on because normally they wouldn't have the time. And it's hard sometimes, but a lot of this is also happening where they will do it sort of via Skype or via Zoom. So you think that the people are like really real or really good, or you know, what are some of your advice for people to stay out of trouble?
Yeah. So the one thing is, as far as the information you're consuming, one, minimize that. Go out there, get informed, know what you need to know for the day, get your daily briefing as if you were the President of the United States. Good morning, I'm going to get my daily briefing. Get your daily briefing, then turn it off. And then if you need to come in midday to get a midday briefing, that's great. Get your midday briefing, then turn it off. If you are sitting constantly being barraged by the negative news, not just the news, but all the stuff that's happening, going on Facebook, on social media, reading stuff from people whom you don't even know, you're going to have a problem. I don't care how resilient you are, you're going to be affected by it. And then especially late at night, don't consume anything. Do not consume anything. Late at night, that's when you're preparing your mind and your body for sleep so that you can sleep, not sit and think about all this stuff. That's the most important thing. And now that you are working from home, manage. Again, manage yourself. Think about what you're clicking, logging, looking at. And be very careful. So scams and online scams right now, we are getting, people are getting crushed by them. And law enforcement, they're so busy right now, they're dealing with so many things, that's the last thing they can help you with. And the majority of those cases, many of which I worked, the people doing these scams are in other countries, which makes it even more difficult. Because when you've got somebody in Russia stealing money from your account or hacking or trying to get your information, who's going to help you? Nobody. That stuff is gone. So just be wise to what you're consuming and be wise to what you're clicking. And if you get an email or somebody saying, hey, I've got this job for you and you don't know who it is, or hey, I've got this plan, or hey, I'm selling this product, you know what you do? You hit delete.
Absolutely. Because we have enough problems in our lives without contributing to them by doing silly things that we know in sort of the back of our minds we shouldn't be doing. But when it comes to people pulling scams on other people, it's really hard. Now, as I mentioned, I just talked to Randy Rush, who he fought the people who scammed him, but he had the resources to do it. And as you say, the police really can't get involved. They are so overwhelmed now. And they've always been overwhelmed with crime, real, physical crime and deadly crime. So it's so important for people to just learn, as you say, step back and perhaps think things through.
Look, and when it comes to your online fraud scams and all like that, a couple of very basic things. If you get an email, look for spelling errors and look for grammar issues. Anytime you see anything like that, it's a scam. And just because you see a bank logo up top, it's easy for me to cut and paste that and put that in there. And so if you get an email, I'll give you a very simple example. Hi, somebody stole your credit card. I'm calling from your bank, and it is your bank, right? And you're thinking, just click on this link or dial this number, and we'll take care of you. Do not dial the number that they are giving you. What you do is you go online, you Google search, and you get the real 1-800 number for your financial institution, and you call that number, even if they call you. I get that all the time. Hi, I'm calling from your bank so-and-so. We saw fraud on your account. I'm like, okay, that's great. Please hang up. I'm going to call you. And I don't call the number they give me. I get my own number. If somebody's on the phone saying, hi, I want to talk to you about your money, or I want to talk to you about your check, or you owe money, hang up. If it's legit, they will find you in more legitimate ways. But never give that information out. And your date of birth. Everybody, if you remember anything from this interview, please go on your social media accounts and delete your date of birth. How many times when you speak to a financial institution or any institution do they verify who you are through your DOB? And yet, you will go to Facebook and everybody's got their birthday on Facebook. Go make one up. I don't care what Facebook says. They can be mad at me all they want. This is a personal identifier. These are such basic ways for people to get scammed. And on social media, if I'm a fraudster, and this happens all the time, all I have to do is go to your social media account, figure out a way to be your friend. I don't care if you're private. You don't know who people are. And I can gather intelligence on you and create a profile of you, of who you are. So another quick tip, your security questions, what's your favorite place to visit? What's your pet cat's name? Your favorite pet's name. All I need to do is scroll through your social media and see where you go. You go to Hawaii every summer. You must like Hawaii. That's your favorite place to go on vacation. Oh, there's a picture of you with your kitty cat Muffin. Okay, your pet's name, Muffin. Very, very simple things, and people get hacked and tricked all the time. Guys, just be thoughtful and be aware and be proactive. Don't let it happen to you.
That's great advice, because those security questions, mine are absolutely phony. I mean, and do not relate at all to my real life. Strangely enough, my sons, when Facebook first came out, now they were little computer geniuses. They were very young at the time, and right from day one, they said, "Don't put anything on there." And I, you know, I wasn't computer savvy in those days, and they were very young. I mean, like nine years old, and they're saying, "Never put anything on." And because they warned their friends, they said, "Don't do it. Don't put anything on there." And so I was, until I started the radio program, I never even had a Facebook page. But when it, you know, came up, then I had to start doing Facebook and the other social media. I remembered what they told me when it first started, that never put the real stuff, because that's how, you know, they have it. So exactly. Now, when, you know, what else, when you're talking to people, are there ways to detect, since you did, well, I was fascinated that you did do these, the interrogations for the State Department and do polygraph tests. Can people really get, fake a polygraph test or not?
It's very hard to do. Very, very hard to do. You got to be really, really good to fake it. And you got to be really good. So I've not experienced that. I mean, we experience people do something that's called countermeasures, where they do things or tactics in the room to try to alter the results. And look, again, I received proper training. I had very good training by the Department of Defense. They were very active in educating me on a consistent basis. And so we were able to determine when people maneuvering or doing things. And but the polygraph test, it's not the test in and of itself. Like, I was the polygraph. Because before I put components on someone to measure their electrodermal activity, which is how much they're sweating, their heartbeat, their blood pressure, all those things that we look at that the body involuntarily does when it feels threatened. Before I even did that, I already spent an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours with you talking beforehand. Sometimes we would get something that's called a pretest confession, where I didn't even have to hook you up to the polygraph. You already told me on your own, hey, I did do this crime. Or, hey, I do have this information on this. It really is about connecting with people and rapport and being able to influence people to talk to you. We want people who are open and who have their guard down. And so part two of the book is reading people, the body language part. But part three, I talk about real science-based strategies, things that are based on true science, psychology, of how we get people to connect with us. Because when people connect with us, they trust us. When we build rapport, they want to talk to us. They're more likely to say yes to us, to be truthful with us, and then also to open up and let their guards down. We don't want to talk to people when their guards up. We want to have that connection, and that is such a skill and such an important skill, not just in your personal relationships or when you're dealing with your kids, but even in your business relationships, even on who to negotiate and trust. People leak information. So like with Randy's case where he got scammed, you know, if he really, he was probably focused on whatever they were selling him, and I don't know the deal, but it's always like, hey, we've got this great thing for you here.
It was software. It was a software application.
Ah, there you go, right? But it's like, so you want to hear, like, hey, what they do is, like, look at this shiny thing over here, and you're so focused on this shiny thing that you're going to get, and it fits the narrative of what you want, because you want to make more money, you want to succeed, you want that you miss all the red flags in the process, because you've got a bias. You want it to work out. And so what I talk about in the book is to be an objective seeker of the truth. And then that's how you notice those red flags. And I literally walk people through. I put so much time into this, because I was like, what would I want to know? And what are the things that people call me up constantly about wanting to know? And I put them in there to make it as simple as possible for people to be like, literally, here are some statements. When somebody says, trust me, as soon as you hear that, you go the other way. Huge red flag. Because somebody will explain things to you. And I would see that often when I dealt with financial scams. So many people would give their money to people and without questioning that person. They would work their whole life, save, 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 and then they just hand it over to somebody. And I'm like, why did you do that? They're like, well, he's the expert. He's the authority. And that's a huge influence strategy that people use. When you perceive somebody to be an authority, you don't ask questions, and you go along with what they want. And so I really kind of get very specific and detailed and make it so simple for people to digest, and it's, use it in your everyday life. It's like a manual for you to go back to again and again.
Well, the book is fascinating, and it's called Becoming Bulletproof, Protect Yourself, Read People, Influence Situations, and Live Fearlessly. And, of course, it's available wherever books are sold. But I would like to tell people, really, get the book, but also get the Audible version. I was so thrilled with this Audible version. And as I said, I've listened to it twice, and partly there's something about it's a Queen's accent or whatever. It's a very comfortable, and almost, I mean, you would be good at scamming people, because it's such a, I was trying to analyze, why does she sound like I can really trust her?
Because I was using my strategies in reading the book. No, but you know why? Because when I read it, it came from a place of a sincerity. Because I remember, there's so many people that write books and other agents that have written books about their time and protecting presidents. And I was just like, I didn't want to do that. I was like, at the core of it, I want to help people because I'm always appreciative of when people help me and guide me and give me tools. And I was just like, how can I continue to help other people in a way that's been meaningful to me in my life? And that's what you hear in the book, truly. It comes from, you know, not to be, you probably don't expect it from a former Secret Service agent, but it really comes from the heart.
It does. And I think that right from the beginning, when I started the book, I felt a real connection to you. I thought, yes, this is a person I want to know more about, and I want to discover why she's really, I think partly you explained it, that you came from a poor background, that you didn't have a easy, you know, everything wasn't easy for you. Sometimes I get these interviews where everything was easy for the author, everything was easy for the, you know, but you look at it from a different perspective, I think.
You know what? I think it's more relatable. It's like, that's just what my path was. And when I read people, you talk to people and they're like, they've had it, blessings. And I'm like, you know what? Good for you. But the majority of us go through such hardships. And I didn't want to write a book. I also think sometimes people, because we want to be perceived as such a success, that we only tell our successful stories. And then what happens is, at least for me as a listener or reader, I become alienated because I think, well, you're not going through what I'm going through. It was easy for you. And my focus with the book was like, no, people need to hear about the hard stuff, the rejection, the failure, which I experienced plenty of, and which I learned from the most, and which actually made me, ironically, more resilient person. And I was like, that's what people need to hear, because that's who I wrote the book for. Because if you just hear how easy it was for me, oh, look how special I am. Oh, look, I'm a Secret Service agent. How are you going to connect? You're going to be like, well, that's you. And I can't be you. And it's just like, I don't want you to be me. I want you to be you. Here are the tools that help me. Take them, make them your own, so that you can evolve and continue to evolve. And that's why the book is called Becoming Bulletproof, because you don't stop evolving. Even myself, I still read books. I still listen to authors. I still want to learn.
Well, I think it's a fascinating book. Now, do you have a website you want people to visit? I think you do. I know you do. It's an excellent one.
EveryPompers.com. They can head to the website, EveryPompers.com, or just, you know, head on over online to anywhere that books are sold. Just put in Becoming Bulletproof, and there it will be. And, you know, truly, I hope it changes people's lives.
Well, I think it will. I have to tell people, go to the website, because the photo of you there is terrific. I mean, it's like really great. You're like a Secret Service agent, what we imagine, you know, for a movie. And who knows? They could make one of your life, because you're certainly fascinating. And I think you've done a great job in bringing this book. There's a lot of stuff in here that I think talks about the current situation and all sorts of things that you're involved with. But it's a really great website, and it's Pom Porous. You type it in, you type Evie and Pom, and it's going to pop up. Evie Pom is going to pop up, and it's a great website and really fascinating. And tips to survive and thrive during uncertain times is part of the your message here to people, and they certainly need it because we're living in uncertain times and challenging times. And I think your book will help so many people because we all need to get this strength and this this ability to live fearlessly. So thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Evie.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, Joy.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, wow. All right, what a day. Two wonderful authors, and I'm going to have, I don't know if I'll have, I might invite Evie back, but I'm definitely going to have Randy back. But now, you know, I just want to take a few minutes here. Wow, this has been a very traumatic period in all of our lives. And so I want to thank everyone for their wonderful emails. I've been getting some really great emails. Many people heard about how I was stuck at home and recording or broadcasting from my kitchen and next to my Whirlpool Whisper dishwasher, which I just love that dishwasher. But I want to, again, thank everybody for sending me messages and my website. Go to my website. You can send me more. It's radio-joyonpaper.com. And I will be happy to answer any of your questions. And Bill Larson, our legal eagle, is going to be here soon. And he's going to answer more of your legal questions, how to protect your intellectual property, how not to get scammed. And many authors are facing problems with groups and organizations trying to scam them. So all of that Bill Larson will handle. And make sure that you send me a message, and it's radio-joyonpaper.com. But now for my normal closing, I normally tell you, you know, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper. But today I want to just take a minute and thank my son. It is his birthday today. I can't believe it. It seems like yesterday that he was born. It was the most wonderful day of our lives. For our entire family, this day, June 18th, was the day that everything came together because this miracle baby was born. And I want to just thank my baby for everything that he has done for me, mostly for all the smiles and the hugs and the years and years of joy. I named this program Joy on Paper because I always look at my husband and my sons as my three joys. And when I started this radio program, I immediately thought of Joy on Paper, my fourth joy. And so, Daniel, thank you for everything. He was born, and I'm going to tell you this, some kids are just born absolutely wonderful. And he was born he was the sweetest, most wonderful kid in the whole world. And here's a song for him. Thank you, Daniel.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
DACA decision. More layoffs. I'm Mike Moss. The nation's highest court says the Trump administration rollback of the DACA program was capricious and arbitrary and will not stand. Correspondent Jessica Schneider has more from the Supreme Court.
When President Trump took office in 2017, that he wanted to roll back this program, and there were issues with the way the administration did it. There were numerous memos, numerous policy decisions that came out specifying how they would roll back DACA. And the question was, did the Trump administration actually roll this program back, protecting these so-called dreamers in the right way? And that was the question before the court.
650,000 people brought illegally to the U.S. as children receive protection against deportation and discrimination under the DACA program. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi reacting this way.
We were in such dread about what could possibly happen at the court up until last night. Just if it goes this way, if it goes that way. But this way is the American way, and we're very proud of it.
President's not happy. He tweets, "Do you get the impression the Supreme Court doesn't like me?" Devin Brosnan, one of the two Atlanta police officers charged in the shooting death of Rayshard Brooks, has turned himself in.
Brosnan was facing three charges in the shooting death of Rayshard Brooks, the first one being aggravated assault, because the district attorney says that Brosnan stood on Rayshard Brooks' shoulders while he was still on the ground fighting for his life there at that Wendy's in the parking lot. The other two were violations of his oath of office.
Correspondent Diane Gallagher in Atlanta. The shooting officer has yet to turn himself in. About 1.5 million laid-off workers applied for first-time unemployment benefits last week. On Wall Street, the Dow was down about 100 points. I'm Mike Moss.
Are you the parent of a 2 to 7-year-old?